Welcome to the Washington Updates podcast from the National Association of Health Underwriters. In this week's installment, John Green and Chris Hartman join us to review the latest details in negotiations over the tax reform legislation. Passed by the Senate in the early morning hours this past Saturday, the bill is now undergoing a conference process with House and Senate members to work out the details. John and Chris walk us through these backroom discussions and what's at stake for healthcare, including for both your individual and employer group clients. Before we get started on tax reform, we have some exciting news to report on our broker bill, as a new iteration of the legislation to exclude broker commissions from the MLR was just introduced. What's different from this version from previous versions, and what is our strategy moving forward?
Well, thank you, Dan. H.R. 4575 is the House bill to deal with the broker MLR issue. And what's different this time is that we actually adopted the Senate language. The Senate language essentially differs in two key ways. First, it eliminates the large group market from relief. And second, it says that broker commissions that are based on bonuses are considered administrative costs. And this does a couple of things. Namely, and most importantly, it reduces the scoring that CBOs always assign to the MLR because of reducing the bill just down to the individual and small group market, which is really for us where the bleeding is occurring. Our strategy remains to get administrative relief from HHS, not as much to get the bill actually passed through the Congress, but it's good to have the marker out there. It sends a signal to the administration, to HHS, that Congress is looking at this issue and that we're serious about getting some relief. We expect a Senate bill very soon.
Yeah, so I think the real goal here is to push the administration into making administrative changes and regulatory changes when it comes to the MLR, specifically the broker commissions. And, I think we have some opportunity to get to that now. I think the administration was afraid to make too many changes to the ACA regulatorily. And they said we didn't need to because it was going to get repealed. So why make changes regulatorily if the whole thing was going to go away? I think we're now at a different point in time, having gone through a few times now, repeal and replace attempts through reconciliation. And so now is really the time to go back to the administration and say, okay, we need to make a workable situation for brokers, for the MLR, for broker commissions, for brokers to be able to do their job. And so introduction of this bill in the House, while we've done that before as an organization, it's going to be used this time really for pressing the administration on making regulatory changes to the MLR, which we believe the administration has always had the ability to do. We told the Obama administration they have the ability to make changes to the MLR regulatorily. And so we're sticking with the same argument this time around.
But an additional argument and an important argument is that it is a barrier for entry for carriers. So a lot of areas are down, counties are down to one carrier. Why aren't there new entrants in the market? Well, the MLR is set so high that it is actually a barrier. And the cost of distribution, which is us, is also very high and directly reduces their margins and makes it difficult to enter a market. So it doesn't feel as self-serving when it's just been us in this fight, but now carriers are recognizing this as an issue for them.
So I think it's true. If a carrier wants to come into a state, maybe a state that only has one or two other carriers in it, how does that carrier actually introduce itself to potential clients, be it individuals, small groups, and others? It's the broker. The broker is really the resource out there to let businesses know that this carrier is available. Well, if you don't have the ability within the MLR and the administrative side to be able to pay any broker commissions, you're just not going to move into another market. So as people are increasingly concerned about lack of options from carriers out there, the MLR and broker commissions is a real hindrance for being able to get competition into markets with only one or two carriers. So I think this is a strong argument about why we have to make adjustments to the MLR.
Another major development over the past week has been over negotiations for a year-end tax extenders package. This is separate from tax reform and would continue delays of the health insurance tax and medical device tax, But legislators are at an impasse over the Cadillac tax. What are NIHU's concerns, and how are we influencing this process?
So let's talk specifically, as the question asked, about these taxes. So this is not the same conversation as tax reform, and we'll get into that a little bit later about what's in the tax reform bill. There's a package at the end of the year that includes keeping the government running, other particular types of programs, and delaying some taxes that come into place. There's three healthcare-related taxes that we particularly pay attention to. Medical device is one. While it's not something we put great efforts into, I do think it increases the cost of healthcare. The health insurance tax that we spend a lot of time trying to get delayed and believe that it adds a few percentage points of cost onto every individual plan, small group, large group, senior Medicare Advantage, managed Medicaid plans, adds cost onto all those plans. And the third one is the Cadillac tax that comes back into place in 2020. But we need to see this delayed now because 2020, as we all know, for brokers, they're planning out with businesses and unions and large businesses and small, they're planning out healthcare plans now. And so you'll start making changes to a plan now to prepare for that Cadillac tax coming into place to put it in steps. And so carriers, if we don't see a delay now, brokers will work with carriers to start raising deductibles, maybe taking spouses off of plans, those sorts of things to prepare for the Cadillac tax coming into place. So all three of these are coming through, and we would like to see all three of these in an end-of-the-year package. I think there are different pushbacks on those different aspects of if we can actually see all three of these in the end-of-the-year package, but NIHU is working very hard on that. John, why don't we talk a little bit specifically about the health insurance tax and some of the latest conversation we've been hearing about delaying the health insurance tax, because we know that the health insurance tax for next year is already baked into the premiums. How can we address that?
So we've had some interesting conversations with our coalition partners around Ways and Means comments that they may delay for small group and large group markets the delay of the premium tax by a year because, as Chris said, those rates are already baked in. However, they are giving relief to the individual market folks. So why? Well, Ways and Means staff say that Treasury claims that providing a rebate, rules are different in all states. And yes, we can appreciate that. Some states don't allow for, you know, a refiling of rates. But I think that under these circumstances of a change in federal law, that there should be some wiggle room to refile rates when there's a change in federal law. Furthermore, if they're able to see the way clear to do this for the individual market, how is that any different than refiling for small group and large group? So it makes me wonder, is there a scoring issue that they see a savings by, you know, handling it this way? We think that they should just go ahead and do it. The carriers see no obstacles. It is really a premium adjustment. It's not a rebate. And so I think if we look at it in those terms, maybe it can change the conversation about what is actually happening here. And we'll wait back.
Yeah, so we're looking for a two-year delay of the HIT tax in all of these different categories the HIT tax falls on. And what John was talking about is they're talking about for next year keeping the HIT tax on the small group market and then delaying it for the following year. This is not desirable to us. I think there are ways for the carriers to give that money back to consumers, to give that money back to small businesses. I don't see why we would allow small businesses to get the short end of the stick again. And so I think we need to work to ensure that some sort of way of getting that money back to the business is in this package in the end of the year. All the insurance carriers are on our side on this, and they say it can be done. So we're going to continue to work over the next couple of weeks to see that is done, but also make sure that the health insurance tax is not in place for the following year. So we don't have those extra 3 percentage points on premiums for any of the categories it falls, be it individual, small group, large groups, Medicare Advantage, managed Medicaid.
If everything happened the way that Chris and I think would write it up, is that they would also pass Alexander Murray, which would extend the CSR payments. They would also pass Collins-Nelson, which is the reinsurance funding for high-risk cases. And combined with a delay of the premium tax, could amount to 20% cut on average of premium. Now, that's quite a deliverable. And depending on how tax reform plays out, there are some provisions in one chamber or the other that sort of delays the tax relief in the tax bill until 2019. So this could be a deliverable for 2018 and would demonstrate, at least on the Republican side, that they can handle health care and do the right thing. But we'll see.
The major healthcare item in the tax reform package is over the ACA's individual mandate. The Senate bill would repeal the mandate penalties, but the House bill would retain the penalties. Based on what we know so far over the negotiations, what is the outlook for the individual mandate in these discussions?
So the individual mandate, as Dan alluded to, is repealed in the Senate bill, but not in the House bill. As we all know, the individual mandate has never been popular. It's actually one of the least popular pieces of the ACA. People never want to be told they're doing anything, have to do anything. So this provision is unpopular. Earlier, during repeal and replace efforts, particularly in the House bills, they looked at several different mechanisms to replace the individual mandate. So you didn't like the individual mandate, but how do you keep people in the insurance market? So a couple of things that they put up. One was a proposal that if you left the insurance market for more than 2 months, your rates would be at 130%. So you would have an increase of what the full rate was in order to encourage people to stay in the market and not just jump in when they get sick. Other proposals were that you couldn't jump back into the market for another 6 months if you left the insurance market for some time. So again, trying to encourage people not to jump back in the insurance market just when they're feeling sick. This isn't an optional in and out free rider system here. But when it comes to the tax bill this time around, there aren't a lot of healthcare provisions in it. This particular provision brings money to the table because if less people are using the subsidies there that the ACA provides, then they can take this money and use it for tax reform, for tax cuts for others, because individuals won't be using those subsidies. I think it will be in the final version of the plan. A lot of people's argument will be, well, these people are choosing not to have health insurance, so we should use that funds elsewhere. I do agree that people are choosing not to have health insurance at that particular point, but I don't think we've really resolved the question of, well, what happens when those people get sick? Are they going to try to jump back into the insurance market? And how do we stop people from only coming into the insurance market when they're sick, as opposed to really trying to keep them in the insurance market and make sure people have that learned behavior the same way you do when you get car insurance, that if you have a car, you get car insurance. Well, after 26 as an American, you need health insurance. That goes unaddressed in this legislation, but for now, it looks pretty certain that the individual mandate will be repealed.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything from Republicans that, you know, that they're going to not accept it. I think I could say with pretty good confidence Republicans accept it on the House side. It'll be part of it because the fact that, as Chris said, it generates a great deal of money and allows to make permanent many of the tax cuts that they're providing, at least in, you know, for some of the taxes.
Now, the one thing I would make sure to advise, especially any of you who work with individual clients, is this repeal of the individual mandate doesn't come into place till 2019. So for all the open enrollment that's going on now, all of next year, tax cuts and EYs, that would all stay in place. So regardless of what they're talking about in tax reform right now, encourage people to get health care now or they will get penalized next year in the taxes. No proposal has removed the tax penalty for next year. So this is a 2019 operation, and we can talk about that when we look at further open enrollments down the road. But nothing changes for individuals when it comes to health insurance for next year. People should continue to enroll. Also want to talk a little bit about some of the other aspects of the tax reform package, other healthcare things to be resolved. For example, the medical expense deductibility And can you expense medical deductions? The House and Senate bills look very different on this. In the House bill, you cannot expense medical deductions. In the Senate's bill, you can. Those are going to have to be one of quite a few different issues yet to be resolved between the House and the Senate on what would be in place. For our members, also, if your business is set up as a pass-through, there's quite a few differences between the House and the Senate bill and how those pass-throughs can be set up. I think that's going to take quite a bit of time to resolve. And how do we make sure, particularly for your brokers who set up as pass-throughs because you're small business owners, how do you make sure that you're actually getting some of the benefits of this tax reform bill? And it's not just large corporations getting those tax benefits. So a number of senators are particularly concerned that small businesses who are set up in the tax through arrangement also benefit from tax reform.
So when is it all going to be over? So I'm hearing that actually it could be over fairly quickly. Believe it or not, the Senate wants to move fast, and they never move fast. But they want to get this done quickly so they can vote and get it to the president's desk in short order. Now, having said that, they have been negotiating on this for quite some time. So they've been sort of conferencing this thing on the QT all along. The Senate did add some AMT language back in and that, but you know, I hear that's all going to be gone in the final package and that they're actually going to come to some resolution fairly quickly. So they're going to meet, they're going to sign off on the document, and it should be over.
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit of political pressure to get a tax reform bill done this year, particularly. I do think momentum is on the side of getting it done this year. How it exactly looks, I think, is still up for debate. Issues around SALT, which is the state and local taxes, can you deduct them? Up to what number can you deduct them? I think those sorts of issues need to continue to be resolved before final passage. But I do think everybody has the mentality of wanting to get that resolved. I think one of the outstanding questions for us will also be, does Susan Collins vote for the final package of tax reform? She was promised by President Trump that if she voted for this, she would get Alexander Murray's market stabilization bill and Collins Nelson's reinsurance legislation passed. But it's unclear what that commitment really means. There doesn't seem to be a lot of appetite amongst House Republicans to pass a market stabilization bill or a reinsurance bill, which would be labeled as an insurance industry bailout. So be curious over the coming weeks. Does she vote for the bill? Do those commitments to see those things pass? We obviously would love to see those pieces of legislation passed, but it's a little unclear right now how much of a commitment and will there really is to get those done. I'm a little skeptical that we will see those things completed this year.
I am too, unfortunately. But, you know, stranger things have happened. Mark Meadows today said that he'd be okay with doing an extension of the CSRs. He was silent on the question of high-risk pool funding, but we'll see.
The other major item that must be addressed in the coming weeks is over funding for the federal government. It appears as of now the Congress will give itself another 2 weeks to avoid a shutdown, which otherwise would occur at midnight Friday. What are some of the major holdups for a long-term deal?
So, well, I see two major things, and they're not healthcare related. One is DACA, which is the Dreamers, and the second is FISA, which is a reauthorization, came out of 9/11 and has been extended over the years. And there's a question of is it still necessary? But those are very, very contentious, and if they're included, I think those complicate everything.
Yeah, so I think we'll see a short-term deal to keep the government open. It's going to be pretty clean, no major changes to spending or tax policy. I do think in there you might see sort of what people are calling a CHIP Band-Aid, where the CHIP program, as we all know, authorization has come to an end. It's expired. States are running out of money. I do think you'll see a CHIP Band-Aid in there where they're providing a couple months' worth of money to the CHIP program. Other than that, I think for this short-term CR, that's all you'll see in there. And then this comes to this bigger package that we were talking about, and this also includes the conversation about the health insurance tax, the medical device tax, the Cadillac tax, this end-of-the-year package, what will be part of that. And so this long-term deal that we're talking about has everything from spending caps when it comes to issues of domestic spending or military spending, caps that were put into place, those three taxes that we're interested in. The DACA issue that John was talking about is high on this area. These are people who were brought to this country at a very young age, maybe two or three, but they are not U.S. citizens. What's going to happen to them? That's very high on the priority of the Democrats to see included in. And then along with that healthcare side, we would like to see a permanent five-year authorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program in that end-of-the-year package. That would help provide some certainty to children with health insurance. Do they need to be finding health insurance from other markets, other areas? If the CHIP program and kids start coming off of it, it's going to have effect on other markets, the individual markets, other markets out there. Anytime you start shifting large amounts of people within the insurance market, it has a rippling effect throughout the rest of the market. So beyond the obviously common good of making sure children have health insurance, it will have effects on the overall health insurance market, which is why we want to see this included in the end of the year long-term deal. And I think that these things can be done, but there's a lot of twists and turns until we actually get to that place, and they might be working through Christmas to do it.
That is all the time we have for today's podcast. I'd like to thank John Green and Chris Hartman for joining us this week for the Washington Update from the National Association of Health Underwriters. Thank you for listening.